I'll do it again now. We'll start all over. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Big deal. So what? Who cares? Yeah. Those are all expressions that you've all heard. When something that you have been important to you was dismissed. Dismissed as not important. You know, you imagine you go to somebody and you say, look at what I did in there. Big deal. Yeah, well, it doesn't make much of a difference. Well, how does that change the globe? Sarcasm. Yes, sarcasm is one of the most fascinating areas of exploration that you can't imagine. I know cultures that are built on sarcasm. That's the only way that they get by. They talk to each other through sarcasm. Sarcasm, the psychology of sarcasm, why people are sarcastic, how sarcasm affects you, what sarcasm does, how it works in the brain, the latest neural research on sarcasm, and what we've learned by being able to examine the neural networks of the brain. That's what we're going to present today to you. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind, and we will be taking your calls as well. There's a thing about sarcasm. You know, they call them wise guys, make sarcastic remarks, wise crackers. They see their remarks as clever diversions. But because the distinction between a joke and an insult can be nebulous, they can easily damage relationships and careers with one-liners. You could say something offhandedly in a form of sarcasm that could be very destructive to somebody. Well, you know her, she likes to drink, kiddingly, jokingly. Well, you know him, he never could get his work life together. A joke that you might say, but it goes into the mind of somebody else. And that at the cost of someone else. Sarcasm, I mean, why would we do it? Though they may not be aware of it, sarcasm is the means of indirectly expressing anger. See? Towards others and insecurity at the same time. So this is what we found. We find that sarcasm works on three levels. Three levels. The bad news is it reflects anger. Therefore, we're saying, hey, if you're angry, why don't you just say you're angry? Number two, it reflects insecurity. So whenever I see anybody who is sarcastic, I think of them as a kind of a helpless child. I have almost, and not only do I have I don't have a disdain, I have a kind of a sadness for a person who is sarcastic. And I had a close friend who was always sarcastic. He was a man who, until I got the point, until I realized what the sarcasm was about, it used to just hit me time and time again, because out of nowhere he'd say something sarcastic, and it kind of worked like this. I would tell him I had this deep emotional experience, and he would say something sarcastic about it. Like, well, you know, that and a nickel won't get you on the subway. Something like that, kiddingly. And then I realized what it was meant to do. The sarcasm was meant to diminish the potency of the connection between me and him. Because what I was saying was so real and so much of a connection inside of me that he wanted to avoid the intimacy of that. Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. Intimacy. Yes, people who are sarcastic tend not to like intimacy because it's your way of dancing away. But now there's good news about sarcasm, too. There's a lot of interesting stuff about it. It turns out that the people who are the most sarcastic, although they are the most aggressive passively, and although they are the most inadequate personally, they are also intelligent people. Because it takes intelligence to say sarcasm, and it takes intelligence to interpret, truly interpret sarcasm. Just get an idea. Get a group of people standing around, and one person says something sarcastic, and everybody else laughs, and you have no idea what they were talking about, and you sit there and you feel like a fool. What were they doing? And they were making a joke about you. That's because he tapped into the brains of the other people, and in effect, their neural pathways were more efficient at getting to an interpretation of this alter meaning, you know, because when somebody's sarcastic, they never say directly what they mean. They talk around it. University of Haifa, most interesting study, most interesting study. Rambarn Medical Center. Imagine something being called Rambarn. Rambarn Medical Center in Haifa and the University of Haifa studied 25 participants with prefrontal lobe damage, 16 participants with posterior lobe damage, 17 healthy controls. All of the participants listened to brief recorded stories, some with sarcasm, some with not. And the bottom line of it is, the more brain damage there was, the less it was possible to understand the sarcasm. To get it. Now you can get a picture of this. You get somebody who's like, that people characterize as an oaf. Somebody who is like, you know, a dullard. Somebody who is dull and, you know, a D-U-H kind of person who goes through life very quietly. And people will make a joke about him, and he won't even know that people are making a joke about him because they're doing it sarcastically and his brain can't record it. So he goes through life being made fun of, but he doesn't know he's being made fun of. That's the scene that we see all the time. So let's go back to Haifa. Now, I think Haifa is very important for this because the truth of it is, one of the things I never liked about people from Israel is that they are so sarcastic so often. I never liked it. I mean, not all people, of course, and I know this is one of those generalizations that are going to get me a lot of letters, but part of the style of many of the people that I met from Israel, especially the militant people or the people who were part of the military, was they defended themselves against deep emotional experiences from sensitivities and from vulnerabilities by being sarcastic. And sarcasm is one of the great tools. It's an intellectual tool. I understand it. Imagine if you were in a war and you lost your home and you're laying around and you can't find any food and you're destitute. Imagine somebody can come up with a joke at that moment and say, you know, well, we got to pray for manna, or something like that. And it's kind of a joke when they say it. The humor helps lift you away from the immediacy of the moment. So this is Armand DeMille talking with you about sarcasm. So University of Haifa, they did a very deep study about the prefrontal cortex, and here's what they found, that Professor Shami Suri did a neural network for processing sarcastic utterances. They traced it through the brain directly. And the left hemisphere cortices interpret the literal meaning. Now, here's the thing that happens with every sarcasm. There's a literal meaning, and then there's a hidden meaning. The literal meaning may be, you know, a sarcastic comment, you know, well, I guess I'll get that job done, and somebody says to you, yeah, when the world freezes over. So the sarcastic comment there is the literal meaning of when the world freezes over. See, the left hemisphere sees that, but the frontal lobes and the right hemisphere go to the intention and the emotional content of it. And if you could have another part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, can do the integrating. If you have an activated and a very well-developed prefrontal cortex, you can get the full sense of the sarcasm. So we're saying that sarcasm is really a sign of an extraordinary intelligence in many ways. But it's, you know, what a terrible thing. I mean, we use extraordinary intelligence to hurt other people. Because part of sarcasm does is it almost always hurts. It gives a person a feeling, you know, a sarcastic person also gets a feeling of being superior. there's a kind of feeling of superiority when you can say something that's cutting and slicing, but you can't be nailed for it. So it's this passive-aggressive way of showing anger, and you show this anger by saying something sarcastic, but they can't really say, oh, what a terrible thing for you to say, because it's also humor. It's also funny. Can't you take a joke? So because of that, it makes the person feel elevated. But if it makes a person feel elevated, on the other hand, we have to look at it and we have to think, therefore, this person must need to be elevated. And if they need to be elevated, that means they're dis-elevated. That means they're in the gutter. That means that they feel inadequate. Armand DeMille, we're talking about sarcasm as a means of expressing aggression and insecurity, and at the same time as an intellectual exercise that is sometimes cultural. Why would there be a culture that is sarcastic with each other? Imagine, and I've been there, I've been with families, where you just watch the sarcasm flying back and forth between mother and children and mother and husband. It actually stops all forms of intimacy. It just means don't show me your heart here. Sarcasm is, as I said, a dominant thing. It's a way of being the top dog. But the knack to do sarcasm, again, seems to be linked to the intelligence, the ability to be able to do it. So where and when do you use sarcasm as a way of taking the edge off? You know, sometimes you need it to take the edge off. Like if you're in a hospital and there's surgery going on and you're being operated on, man, you know, it's a good time for humor. Well, here's the way you could use it. Sometimes you got to know what your audience is. People have to have a wide range of tolerance for sarcasm, as they do. People have a wide range of tolerance. But if a person is not receiving end of sarcasm, knows it's meant as a joke, the reaction may be more than positive. But I try not to be sarcastic with total strangers, said Andre Hakim, one of the scientists. He said, because usually people don't receive it. When people look at you confused and you say something sarcastic, you've made a mistake. You've got the wrong audience. Another rule is scan before you send. It's always best to avoid being sarcastic in emails and text messages. Because when you read an email and a text message, you tend to interpret it exactly as it is. And you don't see the sarcastic tone. You don't see the humor that's meant behind it. Sarcasm is highly dependent on the tone. While people tend to take typed notes more literally, those smiley-faced emotions, that little grimace that you make, the turn of your head, that seems to be that which makes the sarcasm almost acceptable. Examine your motivations. I mean, if you're sarcastic with someone you love, ask yourself, am I angry? Is this my way of being angry? If you have someone you love who comes running to you and they come running to you and say, I love you very much, and you say something sarcastic, it pushes them away. I mean, ask yourself, am I really angry at this person? Finally, err on the side of caution. Give it up. Whenever you think you should hold your tongue, hold your tongue. You know, never miss an opportunity to keep quiet. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. We are working with you about this idea of sarcasm, and I know it's affected you and affected your whole life. I wonder how it's affected you, you know, and I thought this would be one of the programs where I definitely would want to hear from the audience about this. How has sarcasm affected you? How do you use it? What does it mean to you? 212-209-2900. Now, this is an opportunity for us to talk, because it's going to be the last opportunity for about a month. Starting tomorrow, Wednesday, the 11th, we start our fund drive, where I've got some wonderful offers for you. be sure to tune in. I'll be doing an extended program at 1 to 3 p.m. tomorrow, and there'll be a lot of extended programs which will be announced on our website, the WBAI.org. On that website, you can see the programs that are coming up, some really special stuff. I'll only be with you once a week for the next 3 weeks for either 2 or 3 hour programs. You can find out about that from my website, thepositivemind.com. You'll see exactly what the schedule is. I've got some really hot stuff lined up, and do I have a premium for you? I have a premium that will definitely help your brain get better. And I got a bargain. I got a bargain. Tomorrow. I have a bargain. I have two bargains tomorrow. I got three bargains. Toboggan. 212-209-2900. I'd like you to call in right now, and I'd like to hear about your experience with sarcasm, how you use it, how it affects you, what it means to you. And we'll talk. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Armand?
Yes.
How are you?
I'm excellent.
I'm calling in reference to your show regarding sarcasm.
Yes, that's
but,
what I'm talking about.
I'm calling because I'm calling in reference to my niece. She's only 9 years old, but she resides with me, and it seems that now that she's been having visits with her mom, she's been answering back with sarcasm, and her mother is the same way, and it appears to me that she's trying to be more like her mother. And I'm trying to come up with a way to try to redirect her without, you know, making her feel that her mother's doing something wrong by being sarcastic. And that's why I'm calling you to...
Good. I'll help you with that. Could you turn your radio down all the way?
Okay, I have it down.
Yeah, but you got to go off. You got to turn it off.
Turn it off?
Yeah, because otherwise we get an echo. It bounces
okay,
back.
I turned it off.
All right. Now, let me talk to you about that. You see... And this is interesting because that happened to me just the other day with a young boy. I was in a swimming pool, and a young boy comes by, and he says something sarcastic. And he said something that was like, it was just like a comment about, oh, I would like to kill every deer I ever see with a shotgun and blast their heads off. Now, that's not sarcasm so much, but it was kind of in there. But I said to him, God, what a dreadful thought. I said, you know, it hurts me just to even think about that. I said, and you're saying it makes me feel so bad inside. Now, what I was doing was I was looking to try to extinguish the behavior by going directly to the effect of it. So you don't have to so much. I mean, even though she would say to you, you know, it's, you can't say to her, it's wrong to be sarcastic because her mother is doing it, right?
Yes.
So the only thing you could do is tell her directly, you know, when she says, give me an example of something she might say that's sarcastic.
Of course, right now I can't think of anything while I have you on the air. As soon as I hang up, I'll probably remember.
Does she say anything related to you? Does she talk sarcastically about you?
No,
about other kids maybe, about other people?
Yes, and it's the tone that she used when she is doing that.
Yeah, and so
annoying.
She'll say, well, what do they know? What did they know? They don't know anything about that. And if you could say, oh, you know, I see that you're upset by them. I see that they touch you. Go underneath the emotion. Get underneath it to extinguish the behavior. I see you're upset with them. Are you angry at them? And she'll talk about being angry at them.
Okay.
You know, and just try to get underneath it. What we try to do to bring to children is we try to bring realness to them. We want to bring reality. We want to say, oh, I hear from the way you're saying that, it sounds like you're really mad. Oh, no, I'm not. Well, you know, you sure you're not mad? Oh, yeah, well, I'm a little mad. And just get them to the point. And this is my way of trying to help children develop into a clearer mind rather than using these other tools.
Okay, I'll try that. That sounds good.
And is her mother your sister?
No, her mother, I'm her mother's aunt.
You're
the aunt of her mother.
Well, then how come you've never told the mother how you feel about the sarcasm? Without saying the word sarcasm,
mm-hmm.
What about you approaching the mom and not talking about her daughter? Not saying that, but just right to the point. You know, whenever you say something like that, it kind of sends a chill through my spine. I would so much rather you were more direct with me about how you feel about people. So in other words, if there was some way of your addressing her, your niece,
mm-hmm.
it might also be really helpful, just to let them know. And the other thing it does, when you point out somebody's sarcasm to them, they are almost embarrassed by it, because remember, the idea is to sneakily express anger. When you expose the anger, they feel embarrassed.
Oh, okay.
And therefore, it kind of squelches it a little bit.
All right, I'll try those.
Okay, thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille with you. We're talking about sarcasm and the way that we handle sarcasm in people. You're on the air. Hi there. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. This is Nina.
Hello, Nina.
How are you?
Good.
I have a really big problem with my mother. I grew up thinking she didn't love me because she would make sarcastic comments,
yeah.
especially in front of other people.
Oh.
And then I feel humiliated. You know, she did things like calling me Little Miss Big Nose when guests were there.
Oh.
And the problem is she still does that. I'm 40 years old, and I took her to a doctor with me for... I had a knee problem. And the doctor said, maybe this kind of therapy would help you. And my mom made a sarcastic remark like, great, another thing that your father has to pay for and you can't do right. And I asked her why she said that. And she said, oh, it's just a joke. I'm just joking. But the thing is, she doesn't make jokes about my brother like that. And she,
yeah, all right, all right. So let's go back to it for a moment. I want you to imagine I am your mother, and you're going to address this issue with me. What exact words do you say to me? After we leave the doctors, and you say, you know, Ma, now tell me about it.
Mom, when you said that, I felt so embarrassed. What were you...
Okay, now you said embarrassed, right?
Yeah.
You didn't say, Mom, when you say that, I feel so hurt. It hurts me like a knife going through my chest. It's almost like you want to hurt me in front of people.
See, Armand, I said that, and then she says I'm too sensitive. The
yes.
reason I use...
Yes, yes, yes. Good. Let me work with that.
Okay.
Okay? Go ahead. Do me. You be your mother. Mom, whenever you do that in front of people, it hurts me so much. It hurts me like a knife going through my chest. Go ahead now. Tell me I'm too sensitive.
Well, you're too sensitive. Why?
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Well, you have to
let me tell you about this. What I am, thanks to the way I was brought up and thanks to you and many of the gifts you get me, I am very sensitive to things. I could feel things. And you know something? I don't want to get tougher because I don't want to become like those tough people in the world. So I hurt easily. Now, here's the deal, Mom. If you step on my toe, I'm going to move my toe. I don't want you to keep hurting me. Stop hurting me, Mom, and don't tell me I'm too sensitive. Stop hurting me. It's what I want you to do. I want you to love me instead.
Well, maybe we can't get along because you are always expecting me to change.
Yes, I don't ask you to change. I just ask you not to do things at my expense.
I don't even know when I'm going to hurt your feelings.
Good. Good. Well, I'll bring it to you every time you do. And I'll tell you something when I do it. You might think to yourself, rather than defending yourself, a very simple way out of it would be to say, I see what you're saying. I apologize. We don't have to discuss this further now, because I know you're just going to defend yourself, you know?
I'm not defending myself.
Yeah,
I don't need to defend myself. I'm your mother.
I understand, Mom. Okay, we'll talk another time. You see?
Yes. I usually end up crying online.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. You know, but making a change in somebody's neural pathway, getting somebody to change the way they are, takes a certain kind of surgical sensitivity to understanding that, you know, you appreciate that they are the way they are, and you are going to affect the change by giving them a little information that they're not used to, and that they are going to defend themselves, and they're going to go on to this defense, and you're not going to respond to the defense with a further counter defense. It's not what you want to do. You just want to be heard, and then you want to offer them an option. And, Mom, if you ever said to me, I'm sorry I hurt you, it would mean the world to me, but you don't have to do it now. You know, and I leave it alone, and I take my distance. Very tough to do, but you really could change. Now, I know people who have had parents, and they've been in therapy, and they learned how to talk to their parents, and the parents change when the children react differently. when the offspring react differently, the parents begin to change.
Well, thank you so much. You know, I'm going to listen to this program again and write this stuff down and consciously do it.
Good. In fact, you could download this, you could put it on a CD, and you could send it to your mother. You know?
Yes.
You could send it there and say, hey, Mom, you want to hear a program about this? And send her the program. Because I know you love the woman.
Yes.
And I know you would like to be loved by her, right?
Yes, yes.
Tell me.
You know, I always wanted her love, and nothing was good enough. And she doesn't, now she's angry at me for not achieving enough. And she doesn't see that at least I'm working on my problem. She keeps telling me I'm wasting my time, and she doesn't realize I was depressed most of my life, and I'm not anymore. And that's an achievement. And I just, every time I'm with her, I feel so low and ugly and, like, and I can't believe that I've given someone this much power. In the past, I did it in relationships, and I at least I'm conscious of that now. I don't get involved with people, except for my mother. I try not to get involved with people who, I'd rather be alone than to keep repeating this thing, but it's just, I just never felt loved by her, and I don't, it's hard for me to love myself. I have a critical eye.
Let me take you one step further on this, okay? So in other words, what you're saying is that whether or not she loves you, what you've begun doing is loving yourself, and what she has been saying to you and what she says is that she feels inadequate. Parents look at their children, and when their children don't have the right job, the right success, or they have problems, they feel bad. Your mother's sarcasm is a reflection of her sense of inadequacy because she looks at you and she says, how did I screw this up? But she doesn't really want to ask herself that question because it's easy to find the answer. So what she will do is defend herself against her perception of you, you know, of what she did to you by saying you're at fault. But you're only a child. How could a child be at fault? She brought you up, she made serious mistakes, and she doesn't want to look at her mistakes, so her sarcasm towards you is just a reflection of that. So that goes to her sense of inadequacy. Very, very difficult, and if you see it every time, you say, oh, I make her feel bad. You see, if I were you, I would make myself more functionless. I would not tell her, oh, I'm trying real hard, Mom. Look, I've gotten out of my depression. Look, Mom, I'm taking a step. I would tell her, you know, Mom, really, every time I hear it, I would maybe even use her tool. I'd tell her you started using heroin or something, or you're experimenting with heroin, or maybe that you've been finding that relationships with men aren't working, that maybe you should have relationships with women. Play with her mind. You know? Play with it. I mean, you could play with that same mind. You could, you know, just make her think you're getting further and further down the drain, and then let her off the hook. She'll be grateful.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind. I mean, here's the idea, my friends. My friends, you have the power to understand people. And this is a tremendous power. It's a great tool. Plus, you have the radio program, The Positive Mind, that teaches you about this. Other things you learn. Use your wisdom instead of being just like everybody else. Use your wisdom on how to deal with people, understanding people, working with people. Use it. We're going to take more calls when we come back. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I think I'm going to play my appreciation song for you. And then we'll continue with our program.
beside me, beside me, this rose so new. I'll muddle through with you to guide me. In this world where many, many play at love and hardly any stay in love, I'm glad there is you.
There is you. Listen, my friends. How much more of a truth can there be than that? I'm glad there is you. I'm glad there is you, the listening audience. I'm sure you're glad there is me. I'm sure there's glad there is we, you know, all each other looking around. It's kind of a funny thing, you know, the website has been fascinating over this last year, that through the website we've hooked up with so many people across the globe who are grateful that WBAI exists, that our station exists, that this program exists, that you, the audience, exists. Somebody sent me some people write to me and they say, I never want you to take callers because I just want to hear the information. Some people say, never take music, I never want to hear music. Other people say, never have a guest on because we only want to have you. And other folks say you should always have callers on because the callers seem to give the most information in the way you interact with them. So in case you have an opinion one way or another, remember there are other people who are always expressing an opinion that might be a little different, which is fine. But listening to you and listening to the way you talk and when you call in and listening to your hearts, listening to how real you are, it is in itself curative. You, by showing who you are, by being real on the phone when you call, not by exposing yourself, but just by being real, you spread an example, you send an example all over the globe, somewhere in another part of this planet, somewhere in Africa, somebody listens to that young woman who called us a minute ago and says, listen to her. I wish I could talk to my mother like that. Maybe I will. So it's really curative. It's curative every time you take a step towards reality, every time you represent what is real. It not only affects you, but it affects everyone around you. And like the woman said earlier, you know, her niece is a sarcastic person, and her niece's daughter is now becoming sarcastic. What does that mean? It just means that her niece's daughter is believing that it is not safe to be in this world without throwing angry jabs at people. I wish her niece's daughter felt safer. 212-209-2900. We're taking your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
My name is Danny.
Hello, Danny.
I've called you before, and this is the first time I'm actually using my correct name.
Oh.
So I guess that's a step forward.
Well, there you go right there, Danny. What made the difference?
This show that you're doing today is like tearing me apart, and partly because I am that girl who called just a while ago's mother. I'm losing my marriage right now because I am sarcastic. I never saw it as a problem. I'm 60 years old. I never really saw it as a problem because it was always looked at, as you mentioned before, as like humor. Most of my life, people saw that as quick wit. You know, that I never realized that it was dangerous. And I now realize that obviously it was dangerous because my wife, who I accuse of being, you know, overly sensitive, just like this girl said her mother does to her. I was just on the phone. Because to me, I was brought up that way. My mother treated myself and my father, I'm an only child, like that, and does to this day. So I guess it's a learned behavior, and I never realized it was detrimental, but now it's hugely detrimental to me.
So you're losing your wife?
Yeah, and my kids. I have a daughter and a son, and I know that I've been that way with them.
Let me ask you something before you go further, okay? What does it feel like? I mean, how sad do you feel?
Now?
Yeah.
Horrible. Absolutely.
All right,
horrible.
So stay with me a minute, okay? Stay with me. We're going to take a step down an elevator. Imagine us going down an elevator. And in the elevator we have, at the very top, we have this intellectual realization that you are losing your family, and that losing them meaning they're going to separate from you, and that you feel bad because of things that you've done and things that you've said. And so one of the ways, if you were to describe it, you'd say it feels like total chaos. It's like your mind can't stop thinking. Your mind won't keep going, right? It won't stop.
Exactly.
That's the top layer. Now let's get down a layer. And when you say the word, I feel horrible, I want you to say it and actually feel it at the very same time. See what that's like.
I think I did when I said it to you.
Okay, but do it now. Do it now.
I feel horrible.
Now wait. Okay, stay there a minute. Stay with me. Now I want you to feel the empty inside. I don't want you just to think about it. And I want you to say, I feel sad.
I feel sad?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I feel sad.
Okay, now stay in sad. Hang out in sad. Along with sad would normally come tears, because sadness usually reflects a loss. Are those tears far from you or nearby?
They're near to me all the time.
Are they near to you now? I'm keeping you in the now, okay? Because this
most definitely.
Okay, so right here, right now, right? So if you could see your child, if you could see, is it your daughter?
I have a daughter and a son.
So if you could see your daughter, I'm going to go directly to your daughter. What's her name?
My daughter's name is Alex.
Alex, okay, so all I want you to say is, I'm sorry, Alex. I did it wrong. I'm going to do it better. But I want you to see if you could feel the I'm sorry, Alex, here now.
You want me to say I'm sorry?
Yeah, yeah, as if she were really, really could hear you through the ears.
I tell you something. I can say that, and I can say it to you, and I have said it to her before.
Yeah, see, now I'm showing the audience what your mind is doing. What I'm doing is I keep bringing you into the now, and you keep going somewhere else. Do as I'm saying, okay?
Okay. I'm sorry, Alex.
This is what I do for a living.
Okay, I'm sorry, Alex. I did it wrong on many occasions.
And I wish I would do it, and I will do it better.
And I'll do it better in the future.
Yeah. So does that mean, David, did you say? Danny. Does that mean, Danny, that you probably, from here on in, you're probably going to abandon sarcasm with
your
family?
I would like to think so, This is my problem. It's so difficult for me because, like I said, I've been doing it for 60 years.
Yeah.
It's so difficult for me, and the fight in me is, even though I see what it's done to my family, I have a deep wish in the back of my mind that I could find people that would understand me. That
yeah,
you know,
no, I understand that.
Did.
I understand that, but then what you would have is a bunch of people who understood the sarcasm, and they were dancing, and they would all stay away from each other. That's what happens. That's why people use sarcasm. If you had people who understood it, nobody would love anybody. You see, understanding sarcasm is understanding that you're mad at me, but you're afraid to tell me. And that's not the way to love somebody. Yes, so here's what I'm asking you to do. And here, from what I just learned about you, I learned that there is a layer of you of pain that goes all the way back to your childhood that you have not faced. And until we get you there, until we face that pain, you're not going to be able to change your style. So here it is, an opportunity. 60 is a beautiful age to do it. You're going to have to jump in and face this. And if you can't do it alone, I'm going to give you the name of a therapist who's going to take you through it. Because once you go through this, which is not a big deal, but it's a huge deal. Once you go through this, your heart's going to soften. Your family's going to see it, and they're going to love you. They may not come back and live with you, and your wife may not want you. Because remember, she married a sarcastic guy. She may not want a non-sarcastic guy. But
yeah.
you are going to be a loving man. And I hear it in your voice. It's very available.
You know, I appreciate that, and I will definitely take the name that you're going to give me. My problem is that I consider myself a loving man now. It's just that I have trouble showing it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we got to dig into. So
yeah.
Let's dig in underneath that, okay? Call my office. Get in touch with me. I'll give you names.
Okay, what's the number?
212-757-4488.
Okay, thanks, Omar.
Got to save his family, sure.
Thank you.
Sure. And in most of the families that I've ever treated, most of the people I've seen where they were falling apart, it was all a matter of emotions that people were afraid to face. That once faced, make things really clear. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, well, in my case, I am forced to be sarcastic. I have no choice most of the time.
Sometimes it feels like that.
No, that's the reality that I have to face every day. Most people are careless and quote-unquote stupid, so I can't...
So you feel critical of most people, and so your sarcasm comes from what you believe is an accurate evaluation of people and their inadequacy.
Of course, yes.
And what that does for you, what it does to you is to see people who are weak makes you feel angry at them.
No, not weak, well, but the ignorant.
Well, that's a weakness, isn't it?
No, look, if I try to stop someone, if they bump into me, yes, and I try to explain to them the Saint Society or the Art of Loving or Kant's categorical imperative, they just dismiss it. That's just, I can't stop and give them a rational, logical reason why they should be careful. They don't understand it in most cases.
Right.
So all I have is a parting shot. When
they're leaving, I just
say something sarcastic to them.
You forgot something.
What?
Hug them.
Hug them?
Hug them.
I can't. They would think that I'm, you know, trying to mug them or something.
No.
I tried. I start with the Art of Loving, yes?
Yeah, I want you to start with
the Art of Loving. Responsibility, knowledge, I say to them. It's very important.
Hey, what's your name, by the way?
Will.
Will, have you ever met me?
Yes, many years ago.
I thought I heard your voice.
Yes, many years ago.
Did you hug me, Will?
I did, yes. I think when you went through your transformation.
Right.
Yes, I think you were once very heavy.
Yeah?
Yeah, and then all of a sudden you went
so
through...
So what happened when you hugged me?
Well, of course, it was a wonderful experience. I knew you through a friend.
Yeah, so now let's look at this. You and I thought I recognized your voice. You and I had this experience where we hugged through a friend, you know, and it's like I may not have been the most intelligent person at the time or responding to all of you.
But you were sensitive.
Yes.
You're a very sensitive
and,
person.
And I feel so sorry for the people who don't have that, don't you?
Well, I'm not in a position to you know, remove myself from general society. If I could, you know,
you don't have to remove yourself. You just need, I understand you're deeply wounded. You know, you're a deeply wounded person, and the only thing you got left are your weapons.
Well, as a parting shot, when I first tried to explain to them why they should be careful. But they, of course, said very egotistical, and they never, responded.
You see, now, Will, just like you, I see all the egotistical people. I see the people who are self-centered, but I don't feel angry at them. I don't feel
I'm not angry.
Well, yes,
it's
you
just
are.
That I hurt. They come crashing into me. I can't. I'm walking around with a cane.
Yeah.
And they're not even aware of that.
Yeah, I see.
And they almost knock me over, and then that's when I get angry.
So it's your vulnerability that makes you feel that anger at the end. You know, it's like that little bit of power as you go out the door. You're such a needy guy, and that's a compliment to you, by the way. The fact that you need people so deeply. Is there available to you now? Well, no, let me change that. Within the last 2 years, has there been someone available to you who has loved you deeply?
Someone available in what sense?
Someone, a personal relationship of someone who has loved you very deeply in the last 2 years.
No, absolutely not.
How long has it been, Will?
Oh, I say it's been at least 10 years. Yeah.
You have every right to be angry.
Well, I'm not angry.
I know you keep saying
that. I'm very positive within myself. I understand, for instance, Plato's Symposium. Yes?
I know.
The contemplation of beauty.
Absolutely.
Peace, total harmony, and things like that. I spent many years in meditation, and Zen meditation, and everything else.
There's a funny thing about the Zen people. They don't hug as much.
They don't?
No, they don't. I mean, you know, there's these wonderful Zen meditation people. Do you hug them?
No, because they're not fully realized.
Yeah, you see, so this
is... It's a matter of realization.
Okay, so I know your secret. I got your number.
You do?
Yeah, I got your number.
What is it?
Your number is, if I ever hugged you, you would melt. You would turn into mush. And I give you that invitation.
But we hugged in the past. I know you already.
It's in the past.
Yeah.
Come on up to
me. I know you already.
You're
a wonderful person.
And so are you.
Yeah, you're
and
very careful.
Nobody would know it because you got all that shield up, you know?
Hey, I've got a shield?
Yeah, you got a shield. So I'm on West 57th Street, by the way, between 5th and 6th, 6th and 7th Avenue. Let me know when you're coming up. I'd be happy to meet you.
You mean you're inviting
I am inviting you for a five-minute hug.
No, for a five-minute hug?
No, nothing. Absolutely. I welcome you.
Well, I don't think that's going to solve my problem.
No, it's not going to solve your problem, but how could you turn it down?
Well,
you know, how could you turn it down? How could you? It's an invitation to dance. Nice to talk to you, Will. I hope you call me. Bye-bye. Armand DeMille was a brother of mine. I thought I recognized his mind. I remembered. He flashed through me. Such a brilliant man. Brilliant, sensitive. You know, you'd never know it, though, because the way it comes out at you is this kind of distancing remark. But how could a man as beautiful as Will not be loved for a very long, long time up close? Because that's what happens to us, you know, we get the shield. And the shield of sarcasm and the parting shot, like he says, it just becomes, you're another one who let me down. You're another person who let me down. And that's what every one of those is. And what are we letting him down? We're letting him down because we can't love him, because we can't see him, because he's hiding too well, because he hid too well. So he showed us, Will showed us his personality, and he said, here I am, hidden between Immanuel Kant and Plato. Find me in between the leaves. And you said, I can't find the book. And he says, that's the kind of ignoramus you are. You know? Men with a hug. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello, Armand.
Hello, yes.
This is Tisha.
Hello, Tisha.
I'm calling because I have a 16-year-old son who just finished a school year with a teacher who was sarcastic.
Yeah.
Which was very, very painful and upsetting for him.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very different from how home is.
Mm-hmm.
And he had never had an experience with a teacher like that before.
So he felt humiliated by the teacher?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I scheduled a meeting with my son, the teacher, and a school administrator to talk about this. And her response was, she didn't realize that she was being sarcastic. She didn't realize that the things she was saying were hurtful to the students. But one of the students had brought it to her attention recently, and so she's going to work on it. But the thing is, it really hasn't changed.
Well, so, you see, good. Congratulations, by the way. You mothers who get out there and go talk to the teachers, which is a new world, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
In the past, parents would never go to talk to the teachers. I mean, when I was a kid, I remember one of my teachers had a gun.
Wow.
You know, and he used to pull the gun out every now and then and point it at the kids. And he was a priest.
Wow.
and so, Father Joe, every now and then, if the kids got out of hand, he'd pull out a gun. So now this is one kind of priest. And I would tell my family about it. Oh, yeah, he's not going to use it. That would be the end of that. And he didn't use it, of course. But that was our level of growing up. Nowadays, you have the right to challenge it. And, of course, this person does this. And if you explain to your son that this is a sign of her own inadequacy, and you explain that, but you do not tolerate it, if it does not change, if she doesn't do it, go back after her a second time. And just say, you know, I know you're working on this. I know this is difficult for you. But my son comes back to me and he says you're doing the same thing. And I wish you could try to examine what it is that you're doing so that he doesn't have to feel this. Just do it with her gently, you know. If she says, I admit it and I'm willing to change, then it's the beginning. And, of course, she's going to slide back to the way she was.
Yes.
And then just go to her gently the second time. Nudge. Hey, I hear you've made a lot of improvement. My son says you still chide with these remarks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
Great. Thanks for calling
that.
In.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bye.
So this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're not going to take any more calls, even though it was great to speak to so many of you, especially you, Will. Thank you for calling me back. You see, friends, it's all about fear. We're all afraid to get really close because when you get really close, your heart gets really open. And when your heart gets really open, you feel like you could cry just if you get touched, you know? And we want to be invulnerable, and we want to be tough, and we want to be strong, but we miss so much that way. So here's what I suggest. I suggest we keep listening to The Positive Mind. I suggest we keep learning from each other. I suggest we do whatever we can do in the name of understanding and compassion for the people who can't do it. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. for 2 hours. And I'll be presenting you special materials about the human brain and during our marathon. And then it'll be once a week after that, I'll get you the schedule of that as well. You can go to thepositivemind.com to see my website. Or you could reach me at 212-757-4488. Back with you tomorrow at 1, my friend. This is Charlie Parker.